Hey, listeners, this is Manna coming to you before the show for once. This is a little bit weird, but don't worry, I will play the 1980s space intro momentarily. But I just wanted to pop on and share some housekeeping notes with you all. So, firstly, the third anniversary of the Real Witches of the End Times podcast passed this past March. That's pretty cool. I don't know. I mean, I guess I just never thought I'd have a podcast, and now I have one that's old. It's like 21 in dog years. That's kind of crazy. But whether you have been here since the dawn of time, or if you're new ears, thank you. Your support means everything. Listenership is what makes the show run in terms of being visible. Anyone who's left a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify Podcasts, because I guess they bought Anchor or something, this is great. Reviews are a great way to support creators for free. So I implore you to do so, not just for myself, but anyone else that you know that has a show or something of the sort that could benefit from a review. Also, if you would like to support the podcast, you can do so at ko-fi.com/ManaAlin. I no longer have Patreon. I haven't had Patreon since I think October of 2021, but I know that if you ever listen to older episodes, it might sound like I do. Sorry about that. It just wasn't working for me anymore, and Ko-Fi is the way to go now. You can also find more information about myself and what I'm up to at mothmana.com. There's links everywhere there. And other than that, without further ado, let's pop into this interview for today. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side. You're listening to the Real Witches of the End Times, transmissions straight from the underworld. Doom witches, blood wizards, underworld accountants, and cloud people. Welcome back to the Real Witches of the End Times podcast. I'm your host, Manna Aylin. Today I'm excited because a band that I have listened to for about a decade is here joining me today. I have Michigan Fitzgerald and Hannah Piranha from Bird Eats Baby. They also have their own respective solo acts and an act together called Eris. So thank you so much, both of you, for being here. This is an exciting treat for me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's great to be here.
So if you would both be comfortable, would you be able to introduce yourselves a little bit and the projects that you're working on?
Yeah. Shall I go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Okay. So my name is Michigan Fitzgerald. My main project is Bird Eats Baby. I also have a joint project with Hannah called Eris, and I play bass guitar in her project, Hannah Piranha. I play the accordion in a band called The Chemical Perils. And I basically, I'm like a musical octopus. I just like to have, like, you know, as many things on the go as possible, really. That's kind of my thing.
Thank you.
I'm Hannah Piranha, and I'm the singer of my band, Hannah Piranha, and the violinist, or currently cellist, of Bird Eats Baby. And my thing is to play lots of instruments. I really like learning new stuff, so I also play harp and piano and guitar, and I'm also really obsessed with ballet, so that's a little bit about me.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you're interested in dancing. That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I just got into it recently, and I can't get enough. I watch it. I attend classes every week and stuff.
That's fantastic. I'm an aerialist, actually. So
love. Oh, amazing.
Love that when other people like dance. It's fun. Yeah. So originally when you had reached out to me, you'd mentioned that both you, Michigan, and Hannah are practicing witches, or you both practice witchcraft. And I would love to jump into that, given that that's a lot of what my podcast talks about and how that specifically affects both of your approaches to music in general.
Yeah, we actually started our band Eris, which is an electronic kind of dark pop duo. And that actually came about from practicing witchcraft. It's kind of a musical extension of all the spells we were doing and all the sessions we were doing together, and everything about the project is directed back into our magic work.
Is there any particular path that either of you follow, or do you have just a more animistic approach or eclectic approach in general?
We initially bonded over the fact that we're both raised in very, very Christian backgrounds and stepped away from that. But I think when you step away from having such deeply like spiritual roots, but you kind of lose those roots, there's like a bit of a gap there, but you're still a spiritual person. And I think Hannah and I initially bonded through music, and then we started to bond through practicing witchcraft, and we just began to read mainly books on Wicca. We did read a bit on paganism, but decided that that wasn't really the main thing that we were interested in. So it's loosely under the banner of Wicca, but we also studied chaos magic. We use a lot of sigil magic, and but it's not, we don't really follow like one set path. I would say it's loosely under the banner of kind of Wicca, but, you know, a bit more modernized, and we sort of tailored it to our own sort of spiritual needs, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense. I feel like a lot of people that I know, especially ones who grew up in a religious households who have gone through that reinvention journey for themselves, have found themselves in much more of a personalized path as opposed to something specific or by the book.
Mm.
That was a perfect in unison hum.
Yeah, we definitely have the witch thing going on. You know, we can read each other's minds. And
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would totally agree with that. Like, coming from, you know, a background where religion is so institutionalized, just having the freedom to really explore what works for you, I think, is so important to both of us.
Yeah. We love it because we can be creative as well. Like, it feels like, as Hannah was saying, like an extension of our musicianship. It's like another way to be creative, but also to sort of tend to that part of yourself that does need to be listened to, that spiritual side. I think, you know, it's very easy to just fill your life with lots of, you know, lots of doing things. And we're both like very much doers. We like to create and put music out and do as much stuff as possible. But actually, this was a chance for us to sort of actually do something reflective together, and something probably, you know, dare I say, a bit relaxing.
What?
Yeah. Relaxing, what's that? Yeah. But yeah, and it's another way to be creative, but also to, you know, join our minds together on the same goals and the same things, and also heal together. Me and Hannah both had a lot of, you know, trauma that we needed to deal with, and this again was something that we could do together that just really works in our sort of witchcraft learning as well.
Absolutely, especially with vocalization and different paths that I've looked into and studied, that is a huge thing in general. Vibration through instruments, through voice, and I think as well with most forms of artistry, you get that channeled aspect. Even if I noticed some artist friends that I have that are not particularly spiritual still describe almost the same thing of, I don't really know where this came from, but I felt better afterward.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I really think with music, it does feel like you are making magic when you make music and casting a kind of spell with your song. And, you know, that could be like a healing thing or just something, putting something out to the universe and, you know, putting all that energy out. And I think that music really is, yeah, a very serious form of magic.
I'm curious to know if both of your religious backgrounds were similar, or that was this much more of like a Christian or Catholic? Is that what you're talking about here?
Both our backgrounds were Christian, but Hannah's was very Catholic and mine was very like evangelical, kind of modern Christian. So both pretty cringy, you know.
I don't know, man. Like, Catholics, like, I know they've done a lot of bad stuff, but they do have style.
Yeah, they're a bit cooler. Like, they're definitely more goth, whereas there's nothing cool about Happy Clappy Church, you know. It's just like, it's the most anti-goth thing ever, honestly. Like, you know, at least the Catholics have better tunes, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and they've got good taste in decor as well.
Yeah, you know. But a bit of Catholic bling always looks great on the altar, you know.
There's actually, I'm not sure if this is quite reached over where you're at, but at least in the US over here, there's a pretty big within practitioner communities of like a folk Catholic situation going on, of people talking a lot more about folk Catholicism or folk Christianity. I'm not even sure, because I don't practice any, I'm not Christian or Catholic, and so sometimes the word folk in front of something is kind of weird for people, but it's more of an approach that takes
the capital C out of church and puts it back into the roots of the people. Because a lot of traditions such as hoodoo, voodoo, and different types of conjure magic have a lot of Bible-based things, despite it being very not with the church. But I'm not sure if that's happening as much over where you're at.
I've never heard of it. Never heard of folk Catholicism. Have you heard of it,
Hannah? No, I haven't.
No. No, I mean, I've definitely seen the, you know, the sort of hoodoo and voodoo kind of Catholic saints being sort of intertwined with a lot of that stuff, but I wouldn't say I know very much about it, to be honest.
No, that's totally fine. I was just curious if you'd heard
of
it at all.
I'm going to look at it. I'm going to look up folk Christianity, because that seems like a very interesting concept.
It's a pretty divided thing on the internet that I've seen of people who have particular opinions about it, but it's interesting because I think that a lot of people, and both of you are part of this now for me, that I've spoken to have gone, like I said, like a very similar, having a religious background, going through that period of an in-between. For a lot of people I know, they either went through a very atheistic period or just a complete nihilistic period. And now they're back on rebuilding that path for themselves and what looks right or what feels correct. And I didn't know that was a past for either of you. That's some inspiration or some origin, but it makes sense with some of the sound that Bird Eats Babies had. That's kind of a hymnal sound.
Yeah, I definitely say musically that all of my early writing came from the church, from playing and singing in church as part of a choir, and just playing. I used to play the piano at the front of the church for the congregation and sing a lot of hymns, and that was kind of the thing that I loved about church, really, was just the music. So it's definitely influenced my early writing for sure. Not so much these days, but I there was a time where I just couldn't stop writing about religious sort of lyrics and to tie in like religious stories but turn them around to make something a bit more sinister. That was my favorite thing to do for a while.
Hannah, did religion influence your early work at all?
Not at all, really. Although it's always been a bit of a theme. My father was a Catholic priest, and he left the church when my mum got pregnant with me. he left the church then to marry her. So that's kind of that whole story and that whole like weight on my shoulders from that situation has definitely been a huge influence in a lot of my writing.
At what point did you both meet?
I think it must have been 2014.
End of 2014, yeah.
Yeah. We'd seen each other's bands play. I was pretty blown away by Hannah. We were working with another violinist at the time, so it was a while before I asked her to join the band. But yeah, I was pretty chuffed when she said yes. But when I watched Hannah play, I always, you know, was kind of bowled away by this stage presence, but she always seemed so mysterious at the same time, you know, like always felt like, wow, this person is like got so much going on behind the performance. So yeah, I found Hannah to be a particularly like intriguing character. I was very much, I was convinced that she wasn't going to join the band, you know. And then when she did, it was such a great, great surprise. And then I guess we got to know each other quite slowly over the years. And then, you know, then suddenly we were like best friends for
Yeah. I think that's the best friendships, is you don't just immediately fall in love with someone. You do take your time, and that's definitely been Mish. And I think we were partying quite a lot when we first became friends, so that kind of accelerated the friendship a bit, but yeah. We've just kind of gotten to know each other pretty slowly over the last few years.
Do you want to tell the story?
Oh yeah, so as I said, we did used to party quite a lot, and actually Mish and I got to know each other quite well because we were actually in a relationship together with her husband for a while, so that was kind of quite complicated, and we've come out of that, and I'm actually with her husband now, and she's with the bassist of the band, but we're still like just as close as we were.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story, but it definitely worked for us. You know, a lot of people would think that that's quite strange, but for us it just kind of seemed totally normal.
That was actually not dissimilar to my life, so this makes sense to me.
That's the first time anyone's responded with "I understand."
Yeah, it's great. I think most people are just like, what? Like, yeah. How are you guys still cool? But like, mm-hmm. it just, like, when things happen that naturally, it just all makes sense, and there's never any hard feelings because there's never anything that's not just organically happened.
Mm-hmm. I think it definitely is a bit of a mindfuck for people, just with the way that I think media programs our understanding of relationships. Mm-hmm. But then the more that I've spoken to people one to one, such as both of you and other friends of mine, it's like, wow, this is a lot more common in some aspect than I was totally led to believe for like my entire life.
Yeah, I think with our backgrounds as well, it was quite, for me, it was completely freeing to like do what felt natural and to get here on our own terms and not be sort of led by what, you know, society or, you know, our Christian upbringings or whatever. And that's, I think, it's been a great to be in a friendship and in a connection with somebody who's just like allows you to be yourself completely. Mm. That's, I think, what one of our strengths is that we sort of, you know, allow each other to be who we're supposed to be and encourage that, you know?
Yeah, I think the other like big thing is we do have a lot of stuff going on, each of us individually and also just together, the way we support each other and all of our projects. And I think like there's just too much going on to really have, you know, much brain space for anything petty that's not to do with the, you know, the plan and the goal.
Yeah,
it does seem like an intricate web of bands, I will say, as I looked into both of you more in preparation for this interview, and I was like, wow, there are more than I thought initially. Because I found Bird Eats Baby first initially, and then Mishkin's solo work, and then Hannah, I found your band when I was living in the UK, and then I found out about Eris actually a couple of weeks ago, and then I didn't know that Mishkin was in a band playing the accordion.
Yeah, that's a relatively new one as well. But yeah, the projects just keep multiplying, much to the like our poor manager trying to keep up.
I know a few other musicians too who have different bands in a similar way that both of you do. But I'm curious, what is the point at which music or what you want to play generates a new group essentially?
I think, well, within kind of the construct of the music industry, people want to know what they're listening to. And so really, for example, right now, Bird Eats Baby, okay, we're a metal band now because we need to conform into a genre. And I think we write a lot of songs, and I think as artists, we're all pretty genreless. So just finding places for all of those songs, and it just allows us the freedom to be creative while still being able to market ourselves within the industry.
Yeah, definitely. We're writing songs all the time, and sometimes you write a song and it's just not right for one of your projects. And also, like, I feel like the more music that you can be involved with, the more chances there are of you reaching people, you know, with different genres and different styles. And it's just, I, you know, neither me or Hannah want to stick to one thing. Like, we're musicians. We're not just going to do the same thing again and again. And I think because we do have such a good network of people that we trust and that we always work with, we're able to do this quite easily because it's not like jumping into a whole new crowd of people. We're just extensions of what the core group already is doing. So for us, it's just a kind of way of like being able to play a bit more. Like Bird Eats Baby and Hannah Piranha, like they've been going quite a long time and they're quite serious projects with quite a big weight to carry. You know, to get an album out on either one of those projects, it's a huge amount of money and time and energy, and it's got to be up to a certain standard, and we have to like stick to the sort of genre that we're in with that and present it well and reach fans and do all these things. Whereas I think it's great to have a project that we're like, Eris is just really fun, you know, we're just going to make some tunes because we want to, and it's a more creative thing then, and we're not like limited to being stuck inside a certain project for the whole time that we're doing music. I mean, if I look at a musician like Mike Patton, he's done like, I don't know, like 15 projects or something. They're all totally different genres. And it seems to work really well for him, and everything that he puts out, it's very much him, but also, you know, totally genreless. And that's really cool. I think like we both would like to be a kind of, you know, music powerhouse.
We'd
like that.
Both like to be Mike Patton,
yeah. Yeah, pretty much, yeah, yeah.
So I know that from an article that I read that Bird Eats Baby, the name, came from a dream that you had, Michigan.
Yeah.
I am curious, Hannah, where Hannah Piranha came from.
I wanted something that just sounded, had a sound to it, you know, just flowed off the tongue. And I was living in Cyprus at the time and just swimming in the sea, and it just came to me in the moment. You know, I was just rhyming stuff around in my head, and the moment that came to me, I was like, yeah, that's what I want. You know, like, my music has bite, it's edgy. I want something that like describes that as well. Just a little bit onomatopoeic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really rolls off the tongue really well. I've always liked it since I first saw it. So
thanks.
Mission accomplished. Michigan, what was the dream that you had?
I actually had quite a lot of nightmares in my teenage years. I had like sleeping problems, and I didn't sleep for a long time. I had really bad insomnia, and I was put on, I don't know what the medication was, but they gave me some pills to like help with the sleep. And they just used to give me these really, really vivid dreams instead. And they were really strong. One time, like, my mom found me asleep, like, on the stairs going up to bed. I just like sat down and just like fell asleep. So it was kind of like the swinging between insomnia and narcolepsy, and the dreams were just so vivid that I wasn't really sure whether I was awake or asleep. And there was like, yeah, I just remember this one particularly savage nightmare where I was like paralyzed on the bed, and there was just something like crawling along the ceiling. Can't really remember it so clearly now, but it really, really frightened me. And I wrote the first Bird Eats Baby song called Shiver. That was like back on the first record. It was the first track we recorded, and that was about that particular nightmare. And out of that song came that band name. And I just remember being with the drummer at the time and was like, and she was like, yeah, Bird Eats Baby, that's cool, let's just do it. Yeah, that's fine. And we were like, okay, cool, whatever. We didn't really expect the project to, you know, go so far. And now I just think it's a bit of a weird name. I'm not sure if it really, you know, works, but it's still going, so there we go.
I think it really catches people's eye because it's not often you see words together as a name.
Yeah, it's a weird one. You definitely have to repeat it a few times because people are like, Bird, what? They're like, you know, I think we had a few early shows where people put us on as like, there was one that was like, Burn the Baby.
But, oh my God.
Yeah,
oh,
I was no. like, yeah, which is a bit too far. Bernie's Baby, Beard the Baby. Oh my goodness. Like, honestly, like, I was just like, I had like so much regret from that band name so many times. But you're right. People don't forget it, and it is kind of memorable, and you know, it's a bit violent and dark like our music, so I guess it does work.
Yeah, it is, it's weird. And I remember a friend hearing it and going, oh, just when you thought all the band names were taken. And I just remember being like a little bit jealous, like, oh yeah, it's really creative.
I don't know, man, Hannah Piranha is pretty rock and roll. It's like, boom, here I am.
I think I must have found Bird Eats Baby through like a Spotify recommendation from the Dresden Dolls or something. And I do remember seeing the word and being like, I have to know what this is. Mm-hmm. So again, I think it is effective, even if it is confusing.
Yeah. Just like our music, effective, even if you are confused. Like.
You mentioned that Shiver was the first song that you wrote for it. I think there are some songs that I remember, but I can't quite find them anymore. I think that they're on Bandcamp, but it's the like Rosary, yeah. and the one with the teeth on the album cover.
Yes, Bigger Teeth. Yeah,
Bigger Teeth.
That was the second release we did. I remember it was just a little EP. The guitarist from 80s Matchbox Beeline Disaster, they're like one of my favorite bands, but they live in Brighton, and he was doing some music production course and he wanted to record our band for free. And I was like, this is great. So we made that little EP just with him. It's just got five tracks on it. But Shiver is actually on the first record, but there was a very old EP that had five songs on it. I think it's been lost forever now, but I might be able to dig it out. But there were five original Bird Eats Baby songs. And that was when it was just me, this drummer called Philippa Bloomfield, and this violinist called Keely. This is before we really, you know, started to gig as a band. But Shiver was on that, and I think it was the first song that we ever played together as a band.
Wow. For what album did you end up joining, Hannah?
For the Tanta Furia. So I joined just after, in fact, I was playing a couple of bills with Bird Eats Baby just after they had done their crowdfunding for The Bullet Within. Just after that, I think their violinist left. So I joined and we released Tanta Furia that year.
2016, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You guys have been friends for a while now, for sure.
Yeah. Almost 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It feels like longer somehow as well.
It does, yeah.
You know, whenever I think about like Hannah not being in Bertie's Baby, I'm like, that never happened.
It feels like we're sisters. Like, I've never met anyone that I feel that connection with. It's like, yeah, it's like Mish and I are sisters. It's really cool. Because it is really cool, because when you're trusting your career so largely in someone else's hands, you like, you want to know it's in good hands. And like, I think we both feel the same way, that we were just like meant to meet each other.
We've both been through so much stuff because of the music industry and because of trying to, you know, put out music and try and be independent artists, that I think when we met each other, it was just like, let's just do this together. And when one of us is not doing so well, the other one will carry it, and vice versa. And every time there's a problem, we solve it together. Every time there's an obstacle, we get around it together. And we just, you know what I mean? We just make sure that we can always go forwards together. And I think that that's really rare, you know, and it's really beautiful. And yeah, as Hannah said, it just, you know, it feels like family for me, especially seeing as we both did have, you know, some difficult times with our own families, finding a sort of bond outside of that group and it being such a strong one is just, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And to be practicing witchcraft now as well, and all of these things are just tying us together. It's just, Hannah was saying before before the recording started, that you know, going into Eras and going into these projects together was really like a celebration of us kind of becoming a bit older together.
Yeah.
You know, entering our 30s and kind of just being like, this is great. Like, we're in a place of strength rather than like, oh, I'm getting older and, you know, stuff like that. We just decided that actually we were just going to celebrate wherever we're at in our life together.
Well, let's talk about Eras then. For this project, how long has this been something that you've wanted to do together? I know you have some songs out, I believe, but do you have a full album out yet, or is that what's coming up?
That's what's coming up. So we've got an album. We're releasing it with a label called Give Take Records, who are based in Los Angeles. And we were featured on their album, This Is Death Pop, which had, you know, it was a compilation album. And so, yeah, since then we've been chatting to them more, and we'll be releasing an album under them. And the album's going to be called Bitch House. And let me just explain that a little bit. It sounds really obnoxious out of
context. It is really obnoxious.
It is really obnoxious. But basically the premise behind that is that whenever Mish and I are together, we're like, you know, for example, when I'm with my partner, like, we're not on our phones, we're spending quality time together. You know, there's rules. And when Mish and I are together, like, I'll check my phone and I'll be like, oh, sorry. And then she'll be like, nah, mate, you're in the bitch house now. There's no rules in the bitch house. So that's the premise for that. Like, it's basically like, this is the bitch house. We do what we want.
Yeah, you can be a bitch. You can do what you want. You literally just, you can eat what you want, do what
you
want.
Yeah, we eat so much snacks in the bitch house as well.
Yeah, it's basically like a house of no rules. And yeah, the crazy shit that we get up to when we're in the bitch house is like, yeah, basically what we do with Eras.
That's fantastic. I feel like that'll be really relatable for a lot of people with their close friends outside of relationships. Right.
Yeah. Yes, it's a good term. You can just be like, yeah, because the album's called Bitch House, isn't it? But we're going to have like the opening track is Welcome to the Bitch House.
Yeah, Welcome to the Bitch House.
So you can just welcome all your friends in, you know, and you're like, nope, there's no rules here. Welcome to the Bitch House. Come in. You can do whatever you want. You can wear what you like and just like, you know. Welcome
it's
to
basically
the bitch
like,
house.
I mean, it's obnoxious, but it's basically like a safe space.
Yeah.
Just a really obnoxious one.
A safe space, but it's still very fun.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the other thing that I like to mention about Eras is that it's a project where we haven't taken ourselves too seriously. Like, obviously me and Hannah are practicing witches and we do make some quite serious music and we do take our careers seriously, but honestly Eras was like
I don't know if you've seen, but we also have with it a like comedy docuseries that goes with the two characters that we are in Eris.
Where what? I haven't seen this. Oh my okay. God, I'm going to look it up.
It's basically like Spinal Tap for witches.
It's basically we decided when we did this that we would be different characters. I still had orange hair at the time as well. I wasn't like gray haired like I am now. But, you know, I was like, I can't really be like Mishkin Fitzgerald in this other project we've got to be. So Hannah was like, okay, like let's put a white wig on you and I'll wear like a long black one and we'll become different characters. So we've kind of made up these two witch characters who are like trying to be witches but sort of failing miserably. And it's, you know, it's not too serious, but we got some filmmakers friends of ours to do like this this docuseries, and there's just little short episodes on YouTube that are the characters behind Eris. There's one where we like, you know, we write music on a laptop, or, you know, and it's really bad. And, you know, there's another one where we're like out in the countryside, like talking to goats and stuff. It's just, it's very, very silly. But I think, yeah, this project is definitely a chance for us to just play and have fun.
I like that you are not taking yourselves fully seriously in this case, like as an outlet, as witches either, because in the occult community, people will just have no fun and they'll think that everything is so serious as well.
Yeah.
But you know, comedy is so important, especially like you mentioned, like for helping each other heal, and also just I think understanding things. I don't know who said it, but there is some quote about how like if you can make jokes about something, it shows a level of expertise in a subject too, if you can like make a really good joke about a subject matter. So
yeah, I think a couple of people thought it was serious. which almost made it even funnier, to be honest, because it's sort of very on the edge of like, are they actually for real or not? Especially the first episode where we introduce ourselves, like it's almost like, you know, could this be a real thing or are they just totally having a laugh?
And I think people only get like, it's only halfway through the episode where people are like, okay, they're definitely joking.
Yeah.
Well, they'll definitely come back and watch more then if they have to find out.
Yeah, we hope so.
I would love to know more about your individual characters, if you'd be willing to share.
So Mish is the ditzy one. She's
the ditzy witch?
Yeah.
So she's never really sure what's going on, you know? Yeah. And she does really silly things, like she'll eat potpourri or, you know, read stuff the wrong way around. I'm not entirely sure she can read, actually. And then I'm the slightly more serious witch who's like, I'm really earnest and I'm really taking everything so, so seriously, but I don't really have a clue what's going on either. But yeah, it's the blind leading the blind, basically.
Do your characters have names?
I think I'm just Mishkin the Grey. And
yeah,
Hannah, what was your name? Didn't you have a special...
I do, but I forgot, so it can't have been that good.
Okay. It'll come to you.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the extra layer here. I can hear, too, just in the way that both of you talk about it, this is a really fun project for you both.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. There was we went to like a graveyard near Hannah's house, and Hannah lives in like quite a nice part of the countryside. You know, and we were just like, yeah, going around in like these witch outfits in a graveyard. And, you know, we definitely got some funny looks. It was pretty amazing.
Funny, you mean dirty?
Yeah, dirty looks. Yeah, it's great. But, you know, we like to ruffle some feathers as well. You know, it's always a sign of a good project if you're offending someone.
Where do you feel that you want to go with this project? Is this one that you want to work on for a little while or one that you think you want to keep going with?
I think that this project could potentially, like, I think it's got the potential to be our most successful project, to be honest. It's a really accessible sound and it's very like low maintenance. It's going to be very easy to tour. It's very theatrical, so it's easy to put on a good show live. You know, it is a bit of fun and we don't take it as seriously as our own projects, but I think also for that reason it's kind of carrying itself. And I do think we could I think in the future, you know, with both Hannah Piranha and Birdie's Baby have just completing our latest albums now, and it's been so expensive and time consuming that Eris is going to be just a really easy project to manage afterwards. And I think we're gonna probably need to recover a bit from our other projects, and Eris will be a great direction to go in for a while, I think. Would you agree, Mish?
Yeah, definitely. I think just the fact that we have an opportunity with a label who's interested in it to sort of take some of that weight of carrying a project, you know, I don't think we probably would have pushed it as much as we have been if we hadn't had such interest from the label. So that's been really, really good. And also we're doing several collaborations inside of the project. So it's also going to have like features from a couple of other artists. We've got a rapper called Samson Samson, who's also like a really good friend. He's out in America. He's definitely a witch as well, so that's cool. But he's going to feature on it. And then we have Wendy Ray Fowler as well, who does like amazing solo music of her own. And then another artist called Ember Honey. So I think with this project, we have a chance to sort of like reach out a little bit more to other artists as well. And as Hannah said, the songs are a bit more accessible, that it's something that we could probably move into when we're both kind of, you know, a bit burned out from the Birdies Baby Hannah Piranha kind of onward thing, and maybe when we need to take a break between albums, this could be something that we do. And yeah, it's just sort of has like song formulas, and then we just put them out, and it's not, yeah, it's just not nearly as difficult as the other projects. So yeah.
Have you done any shows or performed this at all in person yet?
Yeah, we've done about 2 shows, I think. Very theatrical. We have thrones on stage and we wear tiaras. That's a rule. You have to have a tiara in the bitch house. Yeah, and we basically cast spells at the audience. We had we have a kind of a host of male fans, and one of them was screaming at Mish, "Hex me, hex me." That's the kind of fan base we have.
Yeah, and we also have a slave on stage as well, like who's in chains, and we usually like parade him through the crowd in the last song.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty epic, to be honest.
Is this like someone that comes with you, or is this just a volunteer?
It's our manager.
Our manager, yeah. He likes to describe himself as a professional sub.
Fantastic. I love the dedication that they have to your concert.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Did they ask? Did you ask? Did it just happen one day?
I think Simon started as a super fan, and then we just started giving him things to do. And then it just sort of turned out that he was pretty good at organizing stuff, that he was amazing at spreadsheets. In fact, we call him the spreadsheet. So he just started helping us out, and he just really wanted to be involved in like the music scene. He's a huge music lover, but he doesn't do music himself. And, you know, for him, it was just perfect. He gets to be involved in all the videos and like help out with all this fun, creative stuff. And he's just really good at it and really lovely. And he's definitely like part of our coven now. He's just really, really great friend of ours, and has been, you know, pretty much as long as you've been in the band as well, right, Hannah?
I think he started kind of managing the band, or at least as like, you know, their booking agent just before I joined. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've just all like, Simon's like a real integral piece of the puzzle. Like, as Mish mentioned, we call him the spreadsheet, and Mish is the list because she likes to write lists and she's very organized, and I'm the mission because like I never give up. So between the three of us, we make this great like triangle.
Yeah.
I love that. That's that is so fantastic. It's not the answer I was expecting when I asked who was that. So do you think that will continue? Do you think that'll
He gets jealous if we use other subs. So yeah.
We used my brother this one time. My brother's like my brother's crazy. Like, he's really crazy. He's probably like the craziest person I know. And we got him on stage because Simon wasn't available, and he brought his own muzzle. Wow. And then he basically was covered in bear by the end of the show and just barking. We couldn't get him to stop barking.
Yeah, like he was barking at the audience. We had to lead him out, and he was like trying to bark at the audience members. I mean, it was a bit of a weird show, that one as well, because it was kind of in a restaurant and people were trying to eat, and we were just kind of doing our throne thing and trying to cast spells on them, and they were just like trying to eat burgers, and it was it was really weird and totally the wrong vibe. But I mean, they won't forget us, that's for sure.
But yeah, Simon got pretty jealous because we used someone else for that.
Is that a big part of the act, or is that just a portion that happens on? I'm trying to imagine this restaurant. What were you playing? What restaurant was this?
It was the Bun and Bar in London. It's a guy who used to run this this club night in London that was really goth and fetish, but since the pandemic, everybody sort of like, you know, had to downsize.
Yeah.
So he runs this really cool bar now, but they also serve food. But yeah, we came along and we did two solo sets, and then we were like, oh, we'll finish the set with Eris, but I don't think we quite realized that it was a restaurant. So, but we, you know, we never back down from what we're going
to
do.
Yeah,
so,
the problem with Eris is like, you have to go big or go home.
Yeah.
Well, there's no rules in the bitch house, and that includes the tavern you're in.
Yeah. That restaurant became the bitch house.
Yeah.
I'm not sure people had signed up for it when they bought their burgers, but we had fun, and that's more important.
When you say that you cast spells during your shows, is this for you a specific continual actual spell work that you're doing, or is this in this circumstance more theatrical?
More theatrical.
Definitely. I mean, we use stuff from our actual altars and from spells that maybe we've done. So we're using, like, you know, we're throwing stuff around that, you know, we have actually collected ourselves. So it's like stuff that we would use in magic, but generally they're not actual, like, real spells. But this is something that we probably would like to, you know, bring into the music at some point. I mean, certainly with Brody's Baby, we've written stuff all over the stage, and we've written symbols, and we've done quite a few like occult things in that band, and there's, you know, like, we probably would like to do that a bit for Eris. It's just, I think we've only done a couple of shows, so we're still sort of developing what we're doing.
I think the thing for Eris as well is that the songs themselves are spells, like, as we said, like, the band came out of our coven and our witchcraft that we were doing, and so the songs themselves, they're pretty serious, and they're like very based around magic. It's just that then we've got obviously these very silly personas, and that comes into the theatrical element of the show. So it's kind of like marrying the two together a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that you do incorporate some aspects of the occult. I did notice on the Bird Eats Baby's recent single Hex, there is a sigil situation going on the cover.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the whole record is based around demonology.
Wow.
And sigils from that. So there's like 9 songs on the album, and they're 9 different sigils.
And 9 circles in hell.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, I mean, it's not supposed to be specifically like satanic or demonic in that form. I just really obsessed with numerology and demonology, and quite obsessed with the concept of demonology, because before the church sort of, you know, made up the devil and evil, mm-hmm. you know, it was really just a sort of system of describing the light and dark traits of humanity. So, you know, like, the demonology was not like necessarily a negative thing. It was just used to describe various characteristics. And I've done a lot of like shadow work since leaving Christianity, and since being allowed to focus on shadow work and the sort of darker aspects of myself. And I've become quite comfortable with that side of myself. And definitely use like my music, you know, with the Bird Eats Baby stuff, to like express that kind of darker element to myself. It's like a safe place for it to be inside those songs. So I love to like pour all of that into those songs. And so the concept from Hex is basically about like the shadow side and demonology, but not in a sort of, you know, the church versus Satan kind of thing that lots of people think it is, if that makes sense.
Have you looked into Solomonic magic at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Big time.
Okay. I figured.
Yeah. No, I got really obsessed with it in the pandemic. I was just doing loads of reading, and I ended up doing like a course in demonology. And I, you know, read a lot about Solomonic magic, and I studied the Lesser Key of Solomon, and just delving really deep into those kind of occult texts. I just find them absolutely fascinating, especially when there's like a number system for something, mm-hmm. and different symbols for each one, and a different way to summon them. I just find it so fascinating. It's you know, really, really cool.
Is there anything in particular that stuck out from the things that you read or studied that you've incorporated into the record?
Into Hex?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So I chose specific demons based on the songs and the characters of the songs and what would come out in the songs. You know, there's like a demon of music that, you know, you, like, sounds with trumpets and stuff. So that's referenced in Hex. It's like a trumpet. But yeah, each song is meant to be like a different characteristic of a shadow side of yourself. In Illuminate, we had, me and Hannah sort of did this like ritual dance of light and dark. And that was, you know, the shadow side kind of meeting the light side, and you can't have one without the other kind of concept. But there's going to be 9 songs in total, and each one is like a different sort of shadow personality or a demon, and just exploring those kind of themes in this album.
In the process of working on that album and your studies as well, have you, Michigan or Hannah, either of you had any strange experiences or anything like that, given the subject matter?
Yeah, I think like Hannah and I work a lot on manifestation of things that we, you know, would like to happen in our lives. So we definitely would incorporate that into our magic rituals. And we've definitely experienced a lot more things coming to us, you know, that we've sort of asked for. We like to work with the sort of cycles of the moon, and we try to work with that sort of type of magic. It's very much based around like the waxing and the waning of the moon. And each month we do, you know, we do circle work, and we talk about what we would like to achieve. We have like long goals and small goals, but basically we try to manifest things that we want to come into our life that we need. And a lot of those things have, you know, have happened.
Yeah, that's kind of why I was hesitating as well, because lots of strange stuff, but very positive stuff, like nothing dark at all. But like, yeah, as Mish was saying, we do center around the cycle of the moon. And for that reason, we're like, you know, we start fresh every month, and then we, you know, spend time in gratitude every month. And I feel like maybe as a result of that, we're just very, very in tune to like all the good things that, you know, that are happening for us. And I feel like we, you know, we got a lot back of what we ask for. You know, basically nature's the bitch house.
Yeah.
No rules in nature.
Yeah, it's weird to talk about, because I've never really spoken about it with many people. Like, this is the first, I think, interview, if you want, you know, that we've done where we actually specifically have talked about this. It's quite a niche thing, especially, you know, got the music and then the you know, the witchcraft with that, and it can be quite a niche subject. So yeah, I don't know about you, but you know, when you're sort of like doing rituals and stuff, there's a big part of it that's kind of like quite secretive.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You know, which obviously totally, you know, happy and really, really, in fact, really happy to be able to talk about it, you know, openly. It's just brilliant. But yeah, I guess it's like, yeah, there's this sort of secret element of the two of us working together as well that's quite magical. And, you know, we even have like a symbol that we invented for the coven, and we have tattoos of that symbol. And, you know, there's just a lot of sort of spell work we do that's kind of, yeah, I guess based on secrecy. And, you know, the witch's pyramid of, you know, manifesting these things, and the final rule of the four is like, you know, tell no one. So mm-hmm. we tend to tell each other what we're trying to achieve, and mm-hmm. then we don't really sort of shout about it. We just kind of keep it in our minds together, you know. So there is a lot of like symbology and a lot of secrecy and a lot of hidden meaning, both in our magic work and in our music as well, you know.
I think that goes to show just how important this is to both of you, and again, how personal, and also the fact that you're both practitioners as well. I know listeners of my podcast are going to completely understand where both of you are coming from and connect with that. So this is the niche within the niche, conjoining here, 3 niches together. So, I think that will 100% be well received there. But I also love that we all get to know, like myself and listeners to this podcast, whether they know you already or if they go and listen to your various music outlets now, because there's a lot of bands who are fantastic, but at the same time, sometimes I always guess, like, is this an aesthetic thing? You know, is this an occult aesthetic? Is this a magic aesthetic, or like a gothic aesthetic? Or is this someone who is an actual practitioner, like on a deep level? And both of those things are totally fine. It means so much more, especially to someone like myself, if those people are, because you know that they get it. And then if I pick up on little things that I think mean something, if I know those people are into it too, I know that we're probably thinking the same thing. So it's like having these Easter eggs within your music, within interviews, or hearing both of your projects, and again, seeing all these symbols, because symbols are so important in occult things overall. Yes. That it's a great confirmation that
you're both very into it too.
Yeah, it's really nice to meet another practitioner as well who's, you know, just, yeah, so open to talking about it. But also, we haven't really found very many other sort of practicing witches. You know, I've tried to become part of some groups, but I did find them a little bit, as you were saying before, a little bit sort of too serious. Mm-hmm. And very much, again, just it felt like going to church again. There was just this sort of very set way of doing things in a very set kind of format, and there wasn't really any deviation from it. And I found that a bit, those kind of confines a little bit difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's nice when you find your sort of group. So when me and Hannah, you know, practice magic together, it is very fluid and it's quite free, and we just have our own system, and that's really special, you know.
Yeah, finding that bond too. I think a lot of people feel like they have to join a coven or they have to be a part of a group to when they get into anything, because they feel like that they have to appeal to some sort of authority, whether it's people who've been practicing longer than you or a deity or deities or something else. But it's really powerful when you just trust within yourself where you're being led. And obviously, there's going to be people who know really cool things that you can learn from. But again, in your own life, you are your greatest authority. So I think that that's fantastic that both of you have that bond with each other, and that you're able to take that as what it is and trust that more than what you feel like you have to do.
Yeah, I just think it has to feel right, doesn't it? Otherwise, you're just sort of, again, going along with something else that someone said. And I've tried quite a few times over the years, you know, before me and Hannah started practicing together. I did try and join some other groups with witches, but it was funny you saying about aesthetic. A lot of it just did feel like people just wanted to be part of that look and group, but it didn't really matter what the sort of point of it was, you know. Whereas like music to me has always felt like magic anyway. It's always felt like something that just comes out of nowhere and you're almost channeling without really understanding or knowing what's going on. That's what songwriting is like, right? So to meet another songwriter who's also a witch, I mean, what are the chances anyway?
Yeah, the amount of people who I've met who are very, very knowledgeable and into, I think, more of like the pop culture side of the occult stuff. And then when I turn around and tell them that I read tarot and playing cards professionally, that they think I'm an entertainer. They think I'm, you know, just doing it as like a party trick thing. And I'm get really confused sometimes. I'm like, I thought we were on the same page, man.
Yeah. I remember being on part of a WhatsApp thing when I was learning a little bit about like the history of witchcraft. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going on this like, you know, knowledge thing. And then like the main person running it started hating on vegetarians. And I was like, this is weird.
That is,
you know,
weird.
You're like, I don't get it. And kind of hating on Christians as well. And I was like, I get that maybe you don't see their point of view, but this really shouldn't be about, you know. And it's just kind of think we shouldn't really hate on Christians either. Like, everyone's free to follow their own path. Yeah, it was just a bit strange to be in a group where you think it would be more accepting. And I just left. I was like, no, man, not for me. You know.
Did you both learn about magic together, or is this something that originally started individually before you met each other?
Mish had a lot more experience than me with that, and kind of I'd say that she was my influence in, you know, practicing set types of magic. Yeah, I think I've naturally been drawn to that kind of stuff anyway, but yeah, I never really got into it as a concept before I met Mish.
I think I was trying quite unsuccessfully to, you know, find my way through this. And it was really only when me and Hannah started practicing together that it all sort of took off. I was reading a lot and getting into it, but, you know, like I was trying to join these groups and practiced witchcraft. Although both me and Hannah had a really good bond with one of the musicians that's going to be on the Eras record. Her stage name is Ember Honey. And she's amazing as well. You should really check out her music. She's singing on one of our tracks. But the three of us practiced magic. For a while, we were doing it like every new moon. We were meeting up and trying to practice magic together. And she was a really big influence on, I think, on both of us.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's like just such a positive person. I always left those sessions just feeling really like revived.
Yeah, I think that it's great that you can find those connections for group workings within people you trust, but there's should never be that obligation of, oh, I have to do it with this person, you know? And it sounds like what you both have is very like a two of cups type of connection with each other, which I really love for both of you in terms of creation and connection and everything. I'm not sure if both of you are familiar with tarot.
We a little bit, yeah, but we're not. I mean, I used it in magic, and so does Hannah. But is that one of the main things that you study, Mana?
Yeah, that's one of the main things that I study, and I work with a lot of people on. And the Two of Cups is my favorite card in the tarot, and it's not even one of the major arcana that, you know, movies and TV love to act like those are the only ones that exist. It's the card number two in the Suit of Cups, and to me, everyone's going to read, you know, things differently. And some people will often take the Lovers and the Major Arcana to have like this, you know, connection connotation. Some people will take it as romantic. But to me, like the Two of Cups is like a level of intimacy beyond defining friendship or romance. It's like it's beyond that. It's something that you have a level of vulnerability and give and take with another party that enriches your emotional life, your spiritual life, your creativity. And it's like this ultimate like conjoining of forces that is, despite, let's say, the reason why I say it goes beyond like relationships is because it's a connection that would last beyond a breakup. It's a connection that would transcend this reality, that would transcend like the corporeal plane, this lifetime, all of these things. It's like when you find someone and you're like, hey, you, I remember a millennia of invisible things that none of us remember, but I remember it somehow, but I don't know what it is. And then you have that bond with someone that seemingly is unbreakable, despite the fact that it will change forms. So to me, that is a really lovely card. And why I love it as one of my favorites is, as opposed to the major arcana being most of those being more stages of life, I think of them as destinations sometimes. And sometimes I'll think of the minor arcana as the vehicles that we get from one point to another. I like how the Two of Cups is kind of the how we get to those stages in life. So you meet these important people, and that person that you meet, that connection you have, isn't what becomes your life. That's not where you land. That's how you expand your life. That's how you grow together. That's how you get to the next place, is through this incredible bond with someone else.
That's amazing.
That's so cool.
Never look at that card the same way. That's amazing.
That's me lamenting, because I'm very connected. I will lament on the cup suit all day long if people let me. So
great. Awesome.
Do either of you have anything in particular that you like to use in magic? Any particular divination tools? Obviously, you know, secrecy is key here. I'm also, for the most part, I keep my cards close to my chest. No pun intended there. But is there anything in specific that you just like, you know, that you are gravitated to? Or maybe when you're younger, obviously music is going to be one of them. But beyond that.
I mean, for me, I make a lot of candles. In fact, during lockdown, that's kind of what I did with my time. I set up a kind of witchy craft store to sell candles and other stuff. And every time we have like a spell we want to do or something, I'm like, yeah, I make candles for everything. And I'm really, really obsessed with like the vibe that all gives me. And that's my big thing, I think.
Yeah, you should plug your shop as well.
Yeah, what is it? Is it still up?
I've got a shop called Useless Poison. I mostly make candles and stuff like that, but I'm really obsessed. I mean, I would say I'm definitely like a, you know, a fire creature.
Again, fantastic name. You're both like 3 for 3 on names right now.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, that was where Hannah used something negative that somebody said and just turned it into like a craft store.
yeah. Someone said that about me, and I was just like, do you know what? That's got a great ring to it. I'm going to use that.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I guess for me, I like to collect things from outside. I'm definitely more of like a nature kind of witch. I love to be outside in the countryside. I love to forage and collect things and be with trees. I'm a massive hippie. I love to grow my own herbs in the back garden. I love to use these in the spell. I have like a massive bay tree. It's not massive, sorry. It's tiny. This is like England. But anyway, I have this bay tree in the back of the garden. And, you know, I use the leaves from that to burn and write things on them that I, you know, want to manifest. I grow sage in the back garden, rosemary, like everything that I can basically do. At the moment, I'm growing like an Agnus castus tree, which is like, I don't know if anyone knows what that is, but it's like a really healing berry that's really good, especially for like female, you know, PMS and stuff like that.
In the States, we call it Vitex.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah, right. But yeah, I really love using like actual plants and things that I've collected. I've even like been out in the countryside and found animal bones, which I love to collect and clean and paint and turn into artwork and things I can put on my altar. It's pretty goth. So yeah, I just like, I like finding things to use in spells, and especially herbal magic. That's definitely my jam.
That's fantastic. I went to herb school, so I love hearing about herbs and plants and all of those things.
Oh wow, herb school. Awesome. That's like amazing. A really nice place to go. Yeah. Can I go?
Oftentimes herbalists who are also witches will talk about plant spirits, and they'll talk about something, a plant or a stone or something having a particular personality. And I'm not sure if that's something either of you have encountered.
I can't say that I have encountered anything like that. I definitely have, like me and Hannah have a place where we go to where there's this tree. I don't know if that counts, but yeah, we just nicknamed it the magic tree. We would go on this walk up over Brighton Downs, and there's like a small sort of lake at the top and this tree, and it's just kind of really bent over from the wind, so it's completely blown across, and it's just really beautiful and stunning. And we actually have done quite a few, you know, outdoor magic rituals in the summer there, and that's kind of our sort of specialty. I guess that tree is, it's like a hawthorn tree, which is, you know, beautiful and very magic, you know, in terms of history. And yeah, but I can't say that I've ever experienced like anything like that on a personal level, but there are definitely places in nature which I feel are charged with, you know, like a beautiful scene or something, and you just feel really like you're in a place that's, I don't know, somehow important. Would you agree with that, Hannah?
Yeah, I would. And I would add as well, I don't know if this is that relevant, but I would add just the feeling like when I'm on the beach and stuff, and just actually like immersing yourself in like literally every like grain of sand and realizing like how connected everything is. That's the way I feel about, I guess, about nature in general and about everything it produces. It just makes me feel like everything is its own individual entity.
Yeah, that's on par with what I'm talking about. And when I say like personality and everything with all of these elements and aspects, it's less like, I don't mean like a person, you know, a person or personality was probably misleading. More of, when I interact with plants for a long period of time and I connect with them, it's kind of like a fog will roll in that has a particular impression or feeling from it, which is what I think both of you are also describing of. There's just a feeling that is generated based off of an origin point, sand, water, hawthorn tree up on the hill, you know, that you recognize and you know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I just don't think anything beats being outside doing magic. It's just like always feels so much more powerful sitting on the wild grass or on a beach. I'd love to do more magic, you know, by the sea.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just really, really cold in England.
Yeah, the sea is so different. I have to remind myself that what you're thinking of is different than what I would think of when I think the beach and the sea, for sure.
Yeah, I'd love to do it in a warmer place with actual sand. We just have rocks on our beach and it's really, really cold.
Is there anything in particular that you've found through your music and your artistry for both of you that gets misinterpreted a lot, whether it be from fans who like love your music but still misinterpret something, or they have a strange impression when you meant to do something else, or just from the other people within the music scene in general?
Hannah, do you want to cover that one?
Well, I would say for me personally and personal journey through my songwriting, I've had a pretty like dark journey, and I've felt very pained and unhappy throughout, you know, many years, and my songs reflect that. But obviously my songs are just taking all of the darkness and misery out and kind of none of the positives. So, you know, you're left with all this stuff. People are just like, wow, she's like a really scary, angry person. And it's like, actually, no, like, I'm like talk about shadow self. And you know, like, this is really like bringing the dark out and examining it and self exorcism almost. And so people don't understand that that's the process you go through sometimes as a musician, and actually like a really positive person who, like, especially now, makes positive decisions, like is grateful. I see so much gratitude and everything, and that's not very articulate, but that's what I would say for myself. How about you, Mesh?
Yeah, I would just like to add to that that in reality we're both just really, really silly. Like, I think that a lot of people probably expect to meet, like, you know, the queens of darkness, and honestly we're just, you know, like having a giggle in the back. And yeah, I think we get out all our darkness in the music, and you know, once that's channeled out, then there's nothing really left but just a couple of silly witches, really. So yeah, I would say that the biggest misconception, I totally agree with Hannah on that. The biggest misconception is, I think, that people think they're going to meet someone quite scary, and actually we're quite nice. We're not scary, you know.
Yeah, some visual artists that I know say a lot of similar things where they're like, yeah, I draw all these, you know, scary creatures, but that's not my internal landscape, you know, like that's an outlet that's being channeled through. That's what how I'm processing it. I'm creating this in place of inner turmoil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it is quite difficult not to, like, you know, throw in the sort of like woman vibe thing, but I think we do make some quite heavy music, and there's not a lot of like female bands out there doing, you know, that sort of kind of extreme music and doing it. There's quite a lot of singers, and you know, that's great and everything, but I think it's quite rare to find some instrumentalists, like especially someone like Hannah who plays so many instruments within the heavy rock scene. And I think sometimes I think people have like underestimated, you know, who we are and what we can do, have, you know, met a lot of people who've, without meaning to or meaning to, but sort of, you know, patronized and sort of not really quite realized how much of the work is done by us and how much of it is written by us and put together by us and financed by us. And I think that is a, you know, a sort of misconception that I think, you know, I'd really like to sort of work on changing, and just work with other really strong female artists that we try and do so much, because I feel like that is a thing that's still, you know, rife in the music industry. Yeah. There's not a lot of strong females out there, and there's not a lot of females who are in control of, you know, their own sort of music or future and stuff like that. And I think that is another thing that I think has happened. It doesn't happen so much, but there was a lot of, you know, problems with that in the early days of trying to establish ourselves as serious artists. There's a lot of people who are just there to see, you know, to try and take a picture of your skirt, and you're like, great. I'm really glad that you're here for my music. You know, it's just really infuriating.
I think that's another really good point. Like, you know, we're like, I'd say like we're pretty sexual people, and like that is expressed in, you know, a lot of the music we make. But unfortunately, that means that people just sexualize you often, and it's really hard to break free from that and just not to have that just being like the overpowering identity that you're just given, especially from male fans.
Yeah, definitely. I think like you can express yourself sexually and you can still like be quite a competent musician, and I don't think some people realize that the two can go hand in hand sometimes. You know, they just think you're like fronting a band and trying to get views and whatever, whereas like, yeah, kind of what Hannah was saying, like being taken as a serious musician who takes the music and the theory of the music and all of it so seriously, you know, it has been difficult sometimes.
Thank you for sharing that. I feel like a lot of people can connect with that and what various aspects of whatever fields they work in. A lot of listeners I know have unconventional in like capitalism's eyes, jobs and careers. So I have had that issue whenever I've like posted things online. It's like people are like, okay, like this is you showing like your whole body, so you obviously want to be sexualized in this way. And it's like, no, I'm just a person that exists, and I don't need this to be what I'm associated with now as the only thing.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Because you can be like you said, like you can be a sexual person, but that doesn't mean that that's
what you want everything to be coded around when it comes to your perception and audience and everything. And so thank you for sharing that. I feel like that's really important to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of feel like you can't really win, you know? It's like if you express yourself being sexual, then they're like, oh, you're being sexual, you know, you shouldn't do that because feminism. But then like if you don't express yourself sexually, then they're like, oh, you know, you should be allowed to be sexual. And it's just, it feel like as women, we have to think about so many extra things as well as just the music. Like it's quite easy. If you're a guy, you just put out music and people are like, you're a guy who puts out music. If you're a female who puts out music, it's like, well, who are you? And what are you trying to say with that? And if you wear that, then you can't wear that later. And, you know, oh, you're a bit older now, so you shouldn't be doing that. And it's just this constant battle to try and like be this perfect entity of everything. And it's quite draining, you know?
Yeah. And I think a big thing for that is just people just need to feel the need to put everything into little neat little boxes. And it means that you just like can't be accepted as an individual often, and that you kind of, you know, it's like the genre thing. You have to do things that conform to these particular boxes. So, you know, if you express yourself sexually, suddenly, oh, you're like, you know, that's all you are, you're a sexual person, okay, we'll put you in the sex box, you know.
Yeah totally. Yeah, and then when you go and then do something serious, they're like, why haven't you got your boobs out? And you're like, can I not do both or neither? Like, can I be several different things at once? Is that okay?
And or can do I change my mind from one day to the next? Is that right?
Yeah, totally. So funny. And I just like sick of always having to think about like, oh, do I look all right for Instagram? It's like, I don't really care.
Yeah.
If people are on my Instagram page because they're there for like my face instead of my music, then they're not really fans, you know?
Yeah.
But it's difficult because then like, you know, if you don't express, you know, something, then, people do get way more followers and everything if they show parts of their body. I think it's really twisted, to be honest. You know, they don't do that for men, so it's it's something you've got to be aware of. And again, it's just another really great thing that Hannah and me, it's something that we constantly help each other with and support with, is, you know, helping each other like be on social media and be exposed to comments and be exposed to stuff that maybe we might feel vulnerable. And it's a really great thing to have another person being like, yeah, that post is great, don't worry about that comment, that person's a dick, or, you know, actually what you're doing is strong. And no one's, you know, Hannah sometimes talks about like revealing the concepts of songs that are really traumatic that she's written. And, you know, we like to run the kind of story past each other, like, does this sound okay? And it's a really empowering thing to help each other be like, okay, this is great, and you've expressed it really well, and as another female reading it, I find it really empowering, etc. And that's really great.
Yeah, I truly think that people are gonna understand and connect with that, because there's so much, as you've mentioned, when you're entrusting, you know, your projects with each other, and you're writing this music because it's coming through you, it's coming from your own experiences, it's being channeled, it's important to you. And so there's going to be that individual personal weight that you have on it. A lot of people I know who are even like readers as well, if they're tarot readers online, or if they're occultists online, anything that has like that online base, or trying to expand something to get reach via social media, there is so much to be said about having a network of people who get it and who can remind you, like a bad review or a strange comment or like creepy email is like not the end of the world.
Yeah, especially. Yeah, and just having people you really respect, you know, that you know that they're just going to give it to you straight, and if it's not cool, obviously they'll be kind, but they'll let you know. They won't let you put something out that's not all right.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point we should probably mention as well. Mm-hmm. Both me and Hannah have bipolar disorder. Both have, you know, the same diagnosis of a mental illness. And that's something that we've really helped support each other with. But we both know that with that disorder, that sometimes you can be like really up, and obviously sometimes really down. But sometimes when, you know, when you're quite up, you can end up like writing something that you think in your mind is like really like passionate and amazing. And then it's nice when the other person can be like, that's okay, but maybe just like tone it down 10% or something. Yeah. You know, so as well as empowering each other, we also like help each other like not, you know, go too far totally. The other way.
Well,
you know,
with like bipolar, when you're up, you feel invincible, like nothing's ever gonna be, you know, nothing's ever gonna go wrong, and you can do anything you want and let you come down.
What was it on one tour? It's like hashtag cocaine. It was like, that's not a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to pull the wrong audience. You're going to pull our government agencies.
No, like it might be funny to us, but that's not funny. You know, you're just like going too far with stuff. Yeah. Some of the hashtags our manager like had to like log. This is when we were both really manic and also like quite drunk, you know, a few years ago. But yeah, he would basically like have to like log in and delete a bunch of our hashtags or posts. He'd be like, guys, too far, too far. But we're more mature now. We're you know, more mature and sensible and better behaved, sort of.
I have a rule for myself with if I write a tweet that fits like the caliber of what both of you are talking about or something else, I just put it in the drafts folder and I'm like, come back to this in 3 days.
That's such
and
a
if
good
I
idea.
Feel if I feel if I read it and it still makes sense, if it still is legible or it seems fine, then sure. But and there's been plenty of times where I'm like, I don't even know what I was talking about. Yeah. Clearly, I did not need to share this with
that's quite good. We need a draft thread, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, I think this is a bit rude. Am I allowed to drop the C-bomb quickly?
Go for it.
Okay, but yeah, our manager once described us as two lips from the same cunt.
The two of cunts, not the two of cups.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, exactly. But it was you know, like cunt in England is obviously like quite an endearment word, so it wasn't like a mean thing you said. But ever since then, we were like, okay, when we finally do write the autobiography, it'll be a joint one and it'll be called Two Lips, you know.
I love that. Have you recorded the new record for Eris yet, or is that in progress now?
It's in progress. Yeah, we're kind of taking our time recording it at our various places, and then we're sending it off like track by track to be mixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've got 2 weeks in the summer where we're like booked out to finish all the writing. Like the album's kind of written. Mm-hmm. We've got like most of the sort of demo stages done, but yeah, we need to finish off like three more songs, I think, yeah, that are not really finished at all, and then we'll spend the second week just absolutely laying down all of the parts. What's really fun about Eris is we just kind of, because it's really electro, most of the bed of the music is kind of synth and you know, sampled drums, but then we add on our own like organic samples. Like Hannah will make some violin stuff, I'll do some keys, you know, and we'll do a bunch of backing vocals, so there'll be quite a lot of organic instruments in there as well, even though it's quite electro. And I think that gives it a little bit of an extra kind of you know, interesting vibe to listen to. So it's not just purely electronic, there is some like quite organic self-made stuff in there.
I feel like people, if they get a list of all of the bands, depending on their mood, they can pick one and they'll find it. One or both of you will be in it.
Yeah. Our manager said that, wow, we should just make our own festival and all of the bands we're in would just like each other. Days.
That'd be like a triathlon for you both.
Yeah, I was thinking it'd be quite tiring actually, wouldn't it? You know, yeah, it'd be fun though. We'll have to get some body doubles for the next, you know, next stage of everything.
I saw Ailstorm perform, which is a pirate metal band.
Oh yeah, I know them.
And before them, because it was three bands in one show, before them Glory Hammer came on, which is a very like dirge metal, mm-hmm, very D&D metal band. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it till afterward, but like in the middle of Glory Hammer, the lead from Ailstorm came out and played the saxophone for one of the songs and then like left. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad that they have this like interchangeable truss.
That's amazing. Oh,
that's
my God.
Very cool.
Yeah, really cool.
Are there any other band members that move around too, or is it just you both?
Oh, our drummer of Birdie's Baby, Anna, she's got this really cool project called Doja. Yeah, they're kind of like...
They're quite bluesy rock.
Bluesy, prog kind of rock, I guess. They're really cool. And all the bands are kind of networked and you know, support each other. And for example, when Doja were on tour, Mish lent them her van, you know, and then her bandmates have done stuff for us, and everyone's just there to lift each other up.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful as well. We should probably mention as well that Gary, the guitarist in Birdie's Baby, mm-hmm, he also writes a lot of the guitar parts and some of the actual song beds for Eris.
Yeah,
so he's quite an integral part of the project, even though he's kind of the unseen wizard. Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this already, but I've recently joined Hannah's band on bass as well, so that's like
an, that.
Yeah, I did. Sorry, I couldn't remember. But
No. I was just saying as a comment. I'm not. Keep going.
All right. Okay, cool. Yeah. yeah, but it's just that we do sort of move around in quite a lot of projects. But Hannah's guitarist is also in another band called The Last Goodbyes.
Yeah, and he's with my, that's with my drummer as well, and my old bassist who was in the band. So yeah, everyone's just everywhere.
it's nice. It's like everybody's got like another connection of their own. So every single person in the group is part of one project, but then also part of their own thing. I think it's a really healthy way to be as well, because then everybody has, I don't know, they've sort of got their own outlet for their own songs and styles, but also helping each other with something different. So it's just a great way to stay kind of, you know, it sort of feeds your musicianship as well, doesn't it? Because you're constantly writing new stuff.
Well, and I think the other really great thing about that is that if you're just a band member, if you're just in one band, you have no idea of the work behind the scenes that it takes, the responsibilities, whereas like literally everyone in our groups carries their own project as well, so it means that they are really respectful of all the things that can go wrong and all the trials that a band has. And that's really important, because we've had band members in the past who have just, you know, come for the ride and been like, why aren't we playing Wembley, you know? And like
that's a good point actually as well. Yeah, it's like when you've done your own project for so long, then when you join someone else's, you know what it's like, so you're like, I will help you in the best way I know how, because it's so tiring carrying a band, you know, an independent band, especially one that is of like the size, you know, and magnitude of the music that we sort of try and write. That's a really good point actually.
That's something that I've loved learning about when I've looked more into bands and everything, because it actually wasn't until recently that I realized how common it is for people to play in so many different bands, also like different types of instruments. Because I also did not know that Hannah played the cello too. Very cool. I'm learning so much from this, you know. I always tell people that the podcast is fun, but it's kind of a selfish project for myself where I get to learn all these things that I want to learn about.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We did one gig where I think Hannah's instruments took up half the stage. It was pretty amazing. And she was like jumping between cello and harp and then back to the violin and then doing a bit of singing. Honestly, like I was just tired watching her move between the instruments. It was amazing. So yeah, it's also more fun.
Do you play one of those like really large cellos or an electric one that's really narrow, if you know what I'm talking
well,
about?
I have both. So I've got I usually use the acoustic one for recording and the electric one on stage, just because firstly it just kind of looks more rock and roll, and secondly it's like takes up very little space in the van.
Yeah, it's all about the space in the van, isn't it? which I believe 99% of that space is taken up by Anna's drum kit.
Oh my god, yeah, she's got a beast of a drum kit, which is hilarious because she's like, she's tiny. So like, talk about like female stereotypes, like you'll see her come into a venue and be like, wow, she's like so slim and everything, and then like her drum kit is like ridiculous.
Yeah, what was it we said, like looks like Barbie plays like animal or something?
Yes.
Yeah, she's pretty fierce, and it's amazing as well because like she's really into prog music as well, so the drum parts she plays are like so complex and so different and so like well crafted that it's so lovely to like be in a band with someone on drums who's like just that good and just you know, flying the drum flag for all females. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I've absolutely heard that, the intricacies of all of the instruments. And I don't know if listeners will understand what I'm talking about when I say this, but sometimes I'll listen to songs, if I've heard it a lot, I'll try to pick an instrument and try to listen to that only through one of those times. This could be just something weird that I do, but I've noticed that with the drums for sure.
That's cool. I think that's a really cool way to listen. I'm really glad that people do listen like that.
Yeah, that's nice to hear. Yeah. And I'm obsessed with drums. Like, I just can't, like, I don't know. It's an instrument that if I don't have the drums like being really, really good, then I don't know. It's like there's something missing, but like drums just so important. And oh my God, Buddy's Baby, we've been through so many drummers. It was like a running joke that, you know, like, we just get a new drummer every record or every year or something. But Anna's been there for like, what, 4 years now? So
longer, I think.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. Now it feels like we both, for every project now, have like our forever lineups, which is mm-hmm. really nice. It just nice. Feels like it's just really solid, and you know, you couldn't really do the band without that one person now, and that's a really great place to be as well. Everything feels secure.
Do you think that's part of the transitional stage that you've both feel like you've gone into, especially with Eris and everything, but also like kind of feeling like you're maturing with your other bands as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think with Eris, like what we mentioned about, you know, it being kind of a celebration of us being older and stuff. And I think that with our own bands, that's the same kind of process. And it feels like things are really coming together. Wouldn't you say, Mish?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the final piece of the puzzle for me was when your bassist dropped out and I was like, oh, I could dep for you guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, and then you guys were like, do you want to just join the band? And then, I don't know, it just felt like from that point onwards as well, like there isn't really any sort of weak link anymore.
Yeah.
And everything is able now to be run quite professionally. And I think that that's actually something that's really difficult in an independent band, is to have a really professional independent band, because there's not a lot of money going around. It's not like you can offer people a lot of security, or that you can be like, oh, we're going to go on tour and play to thousands of people. It's not a job. It's very much like you're sort of dedicated to it in the hope that it will lift off. But it's so great to then also have like a level of professionalism and a link between everyone to make it that secure, that you just know that things are going to now start to happen because everything is in place. And that's probably the first time for us, I think, that this has been that way with everything and with every person that we're working with. And I definitely think there's some witchcraft going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that whole thing of just mutual accountability, I think, you know, when you're relying on each other equally, and you know, for the other band members as well, like everyone's leaning on each other, and so you've got to make sure that you're strong for other people.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that and sharing that everything that you have this episode. I know that you mentioned that you haven't spoken openly about your practice, and I'm honored that you felt comfortable enough to do so on the show today, and I know that my audience will appreciate that. So again, it's been wonderful, wonderful learning about both of your histories and what you bring into your music, and how much you are dedicated and how much you care about what you are doing. It only, I think, makes the power of what you're doing stronger in general, in terms of what you're creating together and on your own and with other groups. So thank you.
Thanks for having us. It's been really nice to talk about all of this stuff openly. I'm glad we didn't do it in our Eris characters. We did consider it, and then we thought probably not the right. So it's a good decision that we actually didn't do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Can you both plug everything? All of the bands, all of the candles, all of the anything else? if either of you have like some other hat that you wear, I want to hear about it. I want my guests to know about it.
Mish, that's your forte.
All right. Okay. let me start from the beginning. Okay. So we have, we have Hannah Piranha's band, and her new album Wingspan is coming out this year. It's already gone out to the Kickstarter backers, or it's about to go out any minute now, I think.
It's gone out. Backers. Yep.
It's gone out. Yeah. Amazing. Okay. So, brilliant. I'm going to go listen to it right now. So that's coming out. Brady's Baby's next record, Hex, is being teased out slowly song by song to make this 9-piece kind of very dark album. And our next single is called Shift. That's coming up soon. Eris have a full album called Bitch House, which is coming out hopefully later this year. At least we'll have a single, we hope. I have a solo project called Mishkin Fitzgerald and the Chemical Perils. We're now making our second album that's being recorded. It's yet to be titled. We also work with another artist who we should mention, who's called Third Bloom. He is like a visual artist who also makes these really cool electronic soundscapes. He's just been signed to a label in Brighton, which is run by the editor of DJ Magazine and Irvin Welsh, who's the writer behind Trainspotting, which was that very iconic film. So he's really going places, and Hannah and I and Gary have all played on this particular project, and his album Echoes is coming out in July, and that's going to be another really lovely project to be involved in. It's very dark and moody. It's very much our kind of thing. And again, like totally electronic and totally different to the other projects as well. So that's yet another genre that we're getting in on. I think that's it, Hannah. Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Do you have a Patreon or anything? I
think oh, yes. Yeah.
That's important.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we have a patron for Prodix Baby, but it essentially is just all the projects, really. So it's patreon.com/ProdixBaby, but we're releasing music from every project there. And I think, that's it then. Yeah. You can find us on Bandcamp. All of the projects are on Bandcamp, which is the best place to find us. And yeah, don't forget to join our mailing list so you know when we're coming on tour. And Hannah Piran is going to be on tour in Germany next week, actually. We're playing in Berlin, Wetzlar, and
Bochum.
Thank you.
Well, fantastic. I will have all of that listed in the show notes below, as well as links to Instagram as well. And I'm sure that my listeners will love your music. So thank you again so much for being here and sharing everything today. It was fantastic.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a really great show. Thank you.